One, two, three, four. We were Christian kids. We were Christian kids. We were Christian kids. No, I mean like really, 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 really Christian. Ba ba da ba da.
Do 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 do.
No.
I don't know why I had to do that.
Not that one. Anything but that one.
That's what we call good marketing.
How are you, Justin?
Oh, I'm so good. How are you, Calvin?
I'm all right. I'm a little blue. I'm a little glum today.
Oh, because of the Super Bowl?
Yeah. I can't not feel about it.
Yeah, I mean, that's a letdown. I gotta say.
It's a total letdown. And I just really love it when things from Kansas City do well, because then I have something else to talk to strangers about besides Dorothy.
That is the number. Having moved from Kansas and interacting with people to whom Kansas is foreign, that's the number one comment I get. Do you know Dorothy?
So now it's like, do you know Patrick Mahomes? And you're like, no.
Yeah, absolutely not. Who is that?
What?
Actually, I do know.
He's the quarterback.
No, I know. I was being sarcastic. I kind of know who it is, but mainly because his younger brother does TikTok.
Oh, that's funny. Do they look the same?
I don't know. I don't know what Patrick looks like. You have to know. I do not follow sports, even if it is from my hometown.
Neither do I. Not really. But when they win, I want to know about it.
You watched the Super Bowl alone in your studio.
I did do that.
Amazing. But I was gooped at that.
but I was playing fiddle while the game was on, and then I stopped for the commercials like I normally do. So.
Oh, right. You stopped to watch the commercials.
Yeah, well, listen to them. I can watch a game and play fiddle at the same time.
That's true.
Yeah.
Yeah. I watched Drag Race during the Super Bowl, which I thought was beautifully gay. I caught up on Drag Race UK. And
wait,
then,
there's more than one Drag Race?
Oh, yes, girl. Well, I mean, currently, I think the only ones happening are UK and US.
Okay.
But there's Canada's Drag Race.
In the UK one, too?
Yes.
So she, like, goes, like, she just flies overseas and comes back and...
Yeah, well, this one is... was filmed like a year ago or something.
Uh-huh.
So they just showed in the teaser for the next episode, RuPaul coming on the screen and announcing to all the queens that they have to stop filming immediately because of the escalating coronavirus situation. So I don't really know what happens or how that happens, but they had a huge gap in filming, obviously. And it's like showing in real time them finding out, oh, this is a real pandemic. That's a big issue. So.
Wow.
But
wow,
yeah,
wait, did you watch that episode?
No, it hasn't happened yet.
Okay, it's the next one.
Yes.
I'm just so intrigued. Like, oh my God, that gives me anxiety thinking about it.
I agree. It's so triggering. I hate it.
Oh no. Oh,
I would like to pretend that none of this ever happened, but it did, right. And it is happening.
It is. And all of our like creators and creatives and like media houses and television shows and everything, like all of that is going to show that in the years
reflect to come. That. Yeah, yeah. Well, there were a bunch of people on Twitter saying the TV and film world should not include coronavirus. Like, because the new Sex and the City reboot, which is coming to HBO Max, I think.
With the original cast?
Yes, except for Samantha.
Who was...
Kim Cattrall, I think is her name. Now I'm blanking.
I don't remember.
But
the brunette one or the redhead?
The blonde. Haven't seen Sex and the City, have you?
I've seen some vicariously.
It honestly holds up. And we love.
okay.
But it is, they like announced that it is going to include coronavirus.
Yeah.
And everyone's like, no.
Yeah. It just feels so we don't have any, there's no distance. It's like it's in our life. It's in our cereal. It's in our bedroom. It's in like every nook and cranny, corner, crevice. And like.
Bad.
Bad. We don't really want it on the TV, but at the same time, it feels like, you know, well, I mean, there's something about doom scrolling, you know, I saw like some post about that, like, you know, how do we navigate a world when this is the only way that we can communicate with one another or stay in touch with the other people, but everything that we see on there is like sad and bad and scary, and like somehow brings us comfort because we feel like the world's falling apart and we want confirmation that it's true still, you know.
Yeah, well, I will say that, like, I remember in March and April when things were like new and really terrifying and everyone was like locked inside their homes, Twitter actually brought me so much comfort because we were all just making jokes about it, like memes, just like watching the world cope in real time through humor.
Well, that's lucky for you since you are a comedian.
Yeah, I'm constantly on Twitter.
My social network is mostly very sad songwriters.
So they just write sad songs about it?
Right, right. Sad poetry. Oh. Diatribes.
Yeah, I can't.
We had very different experiences.
I would crumble instantly.
Very different news feeds.
I'm frail at the moment. But yes.
Today we're going to talk about worship, yeah?
We are. Speaking of sad songwriters. Worship music, baby.
Yeah. Woo!
Get into it.
Yeah.
Which honestly was, I mean, without a doubt, hands down, my favorite part of church was the worship.
Isn't
music.
That? There are a couple people I've met in life who that is not true for.
But only a couple.
And they said something specifically about, like, they can only get into worship but they're always there for the message. They're only sometimes there for the worship, and they only like the worship when the kick drum is loud.
What? Were they a musician?
No.
But they knew about a kick drum?
Well, they like the bass. They only feel like they can like really get into it when it's like totally smashing their body.
Wow. That's honestly kind of a hardcore opinion to have.
Yeah. He was like preacher in the making and one of like my small group leaders, actually.
I can respect that.
Yeah, but it was weird because he said it to me, and it was like, oh, so like, I mean, I was
has never touched a kick drum.
Well, and also like I was the one who was the acoustic like worship leader in the church, you know, like I never had a band behind me at that church, and so. Mm-hmm. It was like, I never, basically saying like, well, and of course I'm projecting, but it's like, I never get into worship when you're doing it, you know?
Yes. Like, yes. That's what you heard. Yeah. Well, most of the places I went, there was plenty of drums happening.
Right.
For sure. And the drummers were always cute. That's just my opinion.
they wore hoodies and
they were shaggy.
Shoes. Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. For sure.
So I think it's important to make a distinction or like to describe the kinds of worship services and the style of music in particular that we were around as young people growing up in the church. Mm-hmm. And there, because a lot of times I feel like people assume that, especially if they don't know me very well, that, you know, I say that I come from the church and that I did music in the church, and they think, oh, you grew up in like gospel music. And I have to say that that is not the case. My mom listened to gospel music on Saturday mornings with her yellow gloves and pine saw, and then would come into our bedrooms singing "Rise and Shine." This is the day the Lord has made, with like some gospel choir on the stereo. And so that was my experience of gospel. It was like a rude awakening every Saturday when we had to clean up the house, and then. And on Sundays, we would, and this was like not pretty, like sweet gospel music. It was like scream and wailing gospel music, like, constantly.
Well, that, and I'm just thinking about the Saturdays when your parents were cleaning.
Ugh,
the worst. So any music that would be played during that, I can't imagine, would have super positive associations.
Right. And then Sundays, you know, church, I went to lots of different churches. The city where we come from, or the town rather, that we come from, when we were growing up, had 80 churches within the city limits.
Wait, and what?
There were 80 churches in Olathe.
No way. How did you know that?
Because, what do you, what?
We have a podcast.
We have a podcast about this. I was obsessed with the church, and I wanted to know everything about our local church. And it was like my dream to become like some kind of, you know, missions or pastor or some sort of Olathe. Like that was what I had planned to do. Remember, we used to go pray at ODAC and like pray for like this revival that we wanted to see happen, and we wanted all the churches to get together. So yeah, I looked at them in the phone book.
ODAC was the local stadium where all the high schools played their sports.
Olathe District. Athletic
activity center, maybe
activity center. Yeah. So it's like an auxiliary place where they did sports, the big sports. But I think 80 some odd churches that were in existence when we were growing up in high school. So the worship bands, they were like you know, basically like a garage band. Like most of the time, and then for like big service on Sundays, it was like garage band plus 80 singers
harmonizing.
Like, you know, like there's a gang of people singing in the choir behind, and sometimes they would have like special music with just the choir. I had a couple churches that had choirs, or you had like all like 8 people in front in their like blazers and pantsuits.
Well, that was at your big fancy church that you went to.
I went to a few fancy churches.
Yes, but the churches that I remember, it was a central worship leader with a guitar, mm-hmm. often male, I mm-hmm. have to say, mm-hmm. and then like a lady on either side of the stage holding a microphone and their hand in the air, and they were both doing harmonies.
All the time.
All the time. Which always. I loved. I love a harmony to a worship song. To this day, I'm just like, that is my jam.
And then who was behind them?
Then behind them was a drummer, mm-hmm. a bassist, or like a bass guitar player.
Mm-hmm.
And a person on the keys,
mm-hmm.
and maybe another person on the keys.
Mm-hmm. Like organ and like synth or a piano.
Yeah, synth and like a piano kind of thing. That's what I remember just in my soul.
Yeah.
From like all of the churches that I went to.
Yeah.
But I would have loved eight people in suits. Well, but eight people in suits belting it out sounds pretty cool.
Yeah, but normally you couldn't hear them over the people in the audience. It was just like, they were just up there as like praise leaders. They were like, I mean, you couldn't hear them that well. You know, they were like gang vocals.
They were turning down the volume on their mics a little bit. Probably, right?
Well, especially in comparison to the person who was up front, like the worship leader, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
The church I went to earlier had a female worship leader. She did not play guitar. She was the pastor's daughter, and she was very good at singing, and I was glad that she did it. And then, like, you know, for the big church and then for the youth worship bands, it was always different. But one thing that is, like, I don't know if you remember this or not, but, like, we always had, I don't know, like 20 to 40 people on the worship ministry, and they would rotate people out every week. And so you would have, like, different combinations of people every week.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, I remember that. I remember the ladies that I'm obsessed, that I stand.
Yeah.
Again, back to them. They would rotate, and then like they would sometimes get a solo. So that was awesome. They would sing like Hosanna from Hillsong, mm-hmm. which we can't sing because we'd have to get the licensing. I'm not bitter about this. We are going to be doing a little song time on this episode, though. And we're doing stuff that we are allowed to sing, but stuff that rings true to us that really was from our childhood. Wouldn't you agree?
Yeah, for sure. And one of the things that kept happening when we were like doing worship or like having worship songs was there was a lot of folk music involved and a lot of acoustic guitar players. And I remember Bethany Dillon and Shane and Chris Tomlin, Watermark. Rebecca St. James, Vicky Beeching, all these people played acoustic guitar as their primary instrument and led bands with this instrument. But there was also a revival of old hymns and kind of trying to make them modern and more more folky in their instrumentation and arrangements. And
they really did connect because those hymns were well written. Mm-hmm. I mean, they just, like, their melodies mm-hmm. were emotionally evocative. Mm-hmm. And also, were they not written? Well, I don't know if this is true. I was going to say they were written so that people could sing them easily.
Well, they were written with four-part harmony, so they're written in counterpoint.
That's what I was going to say, is that the four-part harmony part, like, people in congregations actually used to sing harmony, didn't they?
Yes, and do it by sight reading. So did you know that, oh gosh, they're called shape notes. Do you know what shape notes are?
No.
So there are certain hymnals that are written where each note, like the on the staff, you have the five lines and the four spaces. Well, mm-hmm. when a note lands on, like, each of the of those lines has special... Wait, no. Hold on. The solfege notes each have their own special
shape. Guys,
this
is music theory 101.
No, this is shape notes. So each solfege note, like do, re, mi, fa, sol, la, ti, do, has its own shape. So that when you're singing... You can just see the shape and know what pitch you're supposed to be on, even if you don't know what key you're in or, like, anything like that. You can hear do and know that you're supposed to sing so and fa, re, you know, and follow the notes this
way. And the regular churchgoers knew this?
Yes.
Yeah, there were people certain... used to be smarter.
No. There was a lot less to do back in the day when you didn't have Twitter.
That's true. They would stand by the piano and practice as a family, right?
Yes, and then Probably. Also as every week. I mean, this was for your entire life. Of course, you're going to get good at that, you know. Especially
now,
if
we just read the letters off the screen in church,
right? The overhead projector
with the words.
Mm-hmm. So in high school, I used to do that every week, make those PowerPoints, like.
For the lyrics service?
For like different worship services and for the middle school and high school worship services.
Yeah, have we mentioned yet that you were... Oh, yeah, we've mentioned that you were the worship leader, like, most of your life.
I was a worship leader, yeah.
Just like a worship leader.
Always associated.
To me, you were the worship leader.
Never, like... But that was my, like, main, like, my primary identity, for sure. And I loved being a part of Christmas and Easter and weddings and funerals and
Bible study at school.
Bible study at school. And
I remember you rocking out at Bible study at school, and I would sit there and, like, smile because you were so good.
Aw.
You really were. And that was like such a gift, right? You got so good at music because you were performing. You were performing like... People expect stand-up comedians to perform, which is every day, every basically. Day.
Yeah.
Or like four to five times a week, you know?
I mean, there were certain days that I had two Bible studies in a day that I was playing for and organizing the worship service for and, like, figuring out with whoever was leading the scripture part of it. Yeah, I did that sometimes six or seven times a week. I mean, that's real.
That's amazing. That's reps.
That's crazy.
That's what we call reps. Yeah. In comedy, I'm pretty sure we call it that. I feel like since I'm orchestrating this episode right now, can you play us a song?
Yes. Come thou fount of every blessing, tune my heart to sing thy grace. Streams of mercy never ceasing, call for songs of loudest praise. Teach me some melodious sonnet, sung by flame in tongues above. Praise the mountain fixed upon it, mount of thy redeeming love.
Wow. Emotionally evocative.
And a lot of very, like, just heavy language in general. Mm. Very, like, I don't know, extremist or something.
Mm-hmm.
And... Gosh, there's so much to say. because this is, I mean, I was raised by the stage and by that stage. Mm-hmm. And we were trained and told and encouraged to see as worship leaders that we were only vessels to be used and not to really get in the way of what God was doing. And so like all of our rehearsals, all of our practices, all of our intentions were only noble if we were facilitating an experience for the audience rather than, you know, having an experience of our own. And we were supposed to, you know, if we had sinned or felt like, you know, we weren't supposed to be on stage if we had sin in our heart. And so like we are held to a higher standard and like had to go and like forgive people or receive prayer about certain things or repent, and made to feel like, yeah, we had to be cleaner than everybody else in the room. And you know, what we used to say back in those days was, as somebody who struggled with homosexuality, and that was probably one of the biggest driving forces of my faith, was like, how do I get clean of this thing? Mm-hmm. And we've talked about that ad nauseum, but like, maybe if I worship hard enough, or maybe if I'm the leader of this thing, maybe if I'm always on stage, maybe if I'm, you know, I remember very specifically one time praying to God and saying, I will never sing a song that isn't about Jesus. I will never do it.
Wow.
And meaning it. And you know, kind of feeling like I might regret that. I might regret having said that, maybe, but it is the thing that drives me, and it's the only thing I really believed in. And
the world would have missed out on so much. So much good music.
And I feel like I just wanted to do what was best, and I wanted to do what was right, and I wanted to do what was going to keep me out of hell. And so, you know, whereas a lot of other kids our age in high school were exploring romantic relationships, involved in like a lot of sports or like partying scene, like, mm-hmm. I was... And you were there too, but we were just like, we were just at worship nights all the time.
All the time. Absolutely. Trying to get clean.
Trying to get healed.
Get that sin out of us.
Get the sin out.
I was just thinking, like, you know, if you are a gay person, and you're told that you got to get the gay out before you're allowed to go on stage and lead worship, that's like a lot of cognitive dissonance at all times, and like always wondering and checking in with yourself, is it there right now, was it sort of like that?
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
Like okay, I haven't thought about a guy in this many hours or this many days.
Don't look at the drummer,
right? Like it almost felt like sometimes I would try to like, I don't know, like become obsessed with something else just to like have something else to think about all the time, you know, and this and worship, playing music and stuff was a part of that. Mm-hmm. And so the churches that we grew up in were very much like raising of the hands. And like, if you were in high school and it was just after summer camp, you were jumping around still. Learned how to jump in summer camp, and then as the high of summer camp kind of came to a dwindle, and you're crash landing into the fall retreat, the you stop jumping as much in worship, and I remember really falling in love with the House of Prayer, the International House of Prayer here in Kansas City, because of how intense they were all the time.
Yeah.
And how much they really believed in, and or like acted and spoke as though they believed in every single minutia of the Bible. And I was like, well, this kind of makes sense. If you're going to believe the thing, you might as well believe the thing. And if it says this, then you might as well do that. And there was like fear and terror, and there's in the people's eyes, and excitement too, that this like impassioned King Jesus is going to come back with a sword.
They also had incredible music, is the thing. Like incredible driving music. And we know that there's constant. Like constant, literally 24/7. But like you go to one of their conferences and you're like, what is this? Like the guitar lines and the melodies and there was so much repetition involved, mm-hmm. that it was like, transporting and really emotional. And I think that was sort of the goal. And like, you probably know or remember more about this than I do, but like one of their main worship leaders, Misty Edwards, talked about how for a time she really hated music and struggled with music because she was like, I think it's emotionally manipulative. And then she like came around and did a 180, right? And and learned that music can be like a tool that quote unquote, big quotes here, folks, like brings you into the presence of God. But God, I mean, all that aside, it is a manufactured emotional state through really good music.
Which I think what I have since learned is that cultures across the planet for thousands of years, if not hundreds of years, but probably thousands of years, have been finding themselves in that kind of deep emotional state by other means. And that it's not only exclusive to people who follow these traditions or this Bible or this dogma, that it's not exclusive to that experience. And so, you know, I have found myself in a similar state listening to other very emotionally driven and emotionally intelligent musicians who don't sing about Jesus whatsoever.
Like Adele. There's that SNL sketch where like it's just people like Adele's Hello or no, it was Nevermind, I'll Find Somebody Like You, that one.
Someone Like You, yeah.
Someone Like You. Like it comes on and people just start weeping for no reason, but it's because it like makes you want to weep in a way that it's like it feels good to weep to that song just because it's sad and emotional.
Yeah. The artist that I was thinking of, or the concert I was thinking of, was I saw Yonsei on tour when he was on a solo tour. The lead singer from the band Sigur Rós.
Oh, okay.
And I remember being in that concert, and I hadn't gone to a lot of concerts by people who were not Christian concerts. I mean, like I had only ever gone to Christian concerts really, voluntarily, or my friends' shows who were all Christian people. And so Yonsei, a friend of mine, bought tickets to go see this concert and invited me to come. And I was very suspicious and went anyway. And the elaborate stage decoration and stage design, the projections, the music that was so moving and builds upon builds upon builds. And then so much chaos and beauty, and his voice just as clear as a bell. And I remember feeling like I was in that trance state, as if I had been at a worship night. You know, the same kind of feeling, and I knew at that moment that whatever this feeling is, whatever this response is to music, I want to find it everywhere in the world, and I want to bring it to every place in the world, and B, it doesn't exist inside the confines of Christian worship. And that I wasn't able to condemn quote unquote secular music or quote unquote, you know, non-Christian music as something that was a lesser experience, because that's not true.
It just
really blew my mind, and it changed my life to be completely honest.
Yeah, I would say that ironically, in my current worldview, they probably serve the same purpose, which is to bring you to connection with whatever that higher thing is. You know, like basically what I'm saying is that music at that concert in a way could have been worship music if you felt like you connected with like the transcendent
I did, but it's like, well, what is worship music? Like at that time, my definition would have been that it was only to meet the singular, you know, Father of the Godhead, you know, like the Father of the Trinity. And so it felt blasphemous to feel those feelings. I felt like I had been in someone else's bed.
That's deep, man.
And that it was wrong for me to feel this moved.
Yeah, you were having a spiritual experience outside of the church.
Basically. I was having a spiritual affair.
Yeah, you were, and that's hot. And that's what this podcast is about. But honestly, kind of.
Yeah. And so I just, so then after that, I was asked to become a missionary through a church in Scotland as a worship leader. And I spent most of my time, well, as a worship leader primarily for that church, and then also an outreach kind of person when church services weren't happening. And so I just like went to open mic nights, and I saw like this exact phenomenon happened there, where mm-hmm. I'd be in a bar and I just like did what I did when I was on stage. I tried to facilitate a moment of transcendence for the people who were in the room, and I considered mm-hmm. their, you know, where they're from and where they came from before they came to the room and mm-hmm. what their lives had been like, and I thought about these things, and just like I did when I was on stage at church. Mm-hmm. And I picked songs that I felt like, and ordered them in such a way, you know, because you get like three or four songs, mm-hmm. and ordered them in such a way like we would do in church, where it's like the first one's the upbeat kind of clappy clappy, praise the Lord, shout to the Lord,
get them all loosened up.
It's a call to worship, right? And then the second one is like, you know, kind of medium tempo, something that's more like, you know, maybe not so wordy, maybe a little bit more melodic, and then the third one's like the ballad. With the high note, you save the high note.
Sure, like, of course.
And you know, after the voices are warmed up with the two more kind of simple songs at the beginning, they would be able to sing along with this kind of like high, mm-hmm. you know, more energetic kind of melodies or more demanding songs. And the same, you know, the same kind of way to design a set list I've taken from my experience in the church and use it now to this day, I would say. And trying to, you know, how do you curate a whole moment? How do you curate a whole evening worth of an emotional roller coaster? And I think sometimes people, musicians, more or less haphazardly kind of select their set lists, or they you mm-hmm. know, they're not necessarily thinking about the emotional roller coaster or the emotional journey that you have the potential to take your audience on. But at the same time, the people who have created transcendent and transformative emotional journeys for me from the stage have considered those things and do consider those things. And so, again, not exclusive to the church experience. And that was like so just mind blowing to me. And
it sounds a lot like creating a set list for a comedy set. Honestly, like the mm-hmm. way you order the jokes is like you do sort of like I will do sort of like a broad joke at the beginning, and then maybe you do like a darker joke, and after the darker joke you do like a lighter joke, and mm-hmm. you do a quick joke, and it's you do have to be strategic about the like the energetic flow that you're going to take the audience on.
Mm-hmm.
If you want to manipulate them, I'm just
But is it manipulation or is it facilitation?
It's facilitation. That's
or is it both?
It's 100% both. It is. It's just a manipulation as of negative context.
Right, right.
But did you, what song did you play first? I realized.
Come That Fount.
Oh, Come That Fount. See, we should have done our upbeat song first.
Which one is?
If we were going to follow your model.
None of these are upbeat.
Okay, none of these are upbeat. Well, I was thinking the last one that we have.
I see.
I also should have said trigger warning. We're going to sing worship songs.
Oh, yeah, total trigger warning. I'm so sorry. Should I sing the next one?
Yes, it's going to remind you of your past, maybe, or your present.
Great is thy faithfulness, O God my Father. There is no shadow of turning with thee. Thou changest not, thy compassions, they fail not. As thou hast been, thou forever wilt be. Great is thy faithfulness, great is thy faithfulness. Morning by morning, new mercies I see. All I have needed, thy hand hath provided. Great is thy faithfulness, Lord, unto me.
Yes, God. That one reminds me of my grandma's church, because we fully sang hymns. This is one thing I want to bring up is, so my grandma grew up in like this very small town in rural Kansas. It like maybe wasn't even a town. I don't know what the qualifications are. It was just a collection of humans that lived near each other's fields. And their church was like maybe 20 people total in like a traditional one, like basically a one room church building. Just, like I mean, there were other rooms. It was like a chapel. Mm-hmm. And they grabbed hymnals. They had just a piano and they sang hymns. So this is like an exact, when you walked in, there would be one pastor whose whole job was to sing, there's a welcome here, there's a welcome here, there's a Christian welcome here. And we used to sing that at home all the time to make fun of it. But
oh my God.
Well, just because it was, he was adorable and it was funny.
I know, but still, that song is ridiculous.
Yes, it is. but there was a Christian welcome there. And that was like a hymn that we would have sang there. And my point here is that at this church and even the bigger church that I went to in Olathe, people would sing worship with their hands at their sides or their hands folded in front of them, their jaws just dropping down and up, and no emotion displayed whatsoever. And then I got into high school and I saw the other churches that you and I went to and like Assemblies of God churches, and people were raising their hands, people were shouting, and I was like, this is totally different than my entire life up to this point. And I remember like timidly deciding I was going to raise my hands and being bashful. Do you remember the first time you raised your hands?
Oh my gosh. Okay, maybe not like the first time, but I'm sure that it happened little by little, like in the dark, in the back of the room.
Yes. Yes,
like, and you were leaving my seat in the middle, because I like to sit in the back anyway because I'm so tall. But like leaving my seat and like going to the very, very back of the room, and then watching for a little bit, and then maybe raising my hands when I knew that everyone else was in it.
Yeah, and like when you're new to raising your hands, you feel like everyone is looking at you when you raise.
They're all looking at you. They're all staring. If you are. Or if you're not, they're both looking. They're looking for both.
Couldn't agree more. The ones that are hand raisers are like, "Why are you afraid? Why don't you have enough
faith?
What
did you do this week?
Are you not giving your all to God?" Right. And then the ones who don't raise their hands are like, "What are you doing? You don't have to do that. You're being emotional." Yeah.
I do remember feeling like, you know, there were weeks. Oh my gosh, it's so hard to even talk about this. But like if I had done something or felt like really guilty, you know, emotionally before God, that I would prohibit, you know, this was a kind of like self, like emotional whipping or something, emotional self-harm, where like I would like keep my hands in my pocket because I wasn't worthy of worshiping God this week, you know, or like I wouldn't express outwardly worship movements because I felt like my heart wasn't clean enough for that. So until I like, you know, I kind of bottled it up, I saved it up for like, you know, there's a night of worship coming in 2 weeks, whether it's like an hour or 2 hours or extended worship, I'll deal with God then, and then we'll be back on good terms, and I can raise my hands then.
You know what I think that emotion is called? Shame. You had shame, and that is sad because that shame did not belong there. You were a human being living your life, and you were essentially doing nothing wrong. And even if you were, that shouldn't separate you from a God that is supposedly bigger than everything in the universe. But I totally get that idea of like also not just like I'll deal with God then, but like, okay, in 2 weeks, if I'm good starting now, for the next 2 weeks, then by the time it comes around, I will be okay. This feeling will pass. You know what I mean? It was like waiting for that feeling of shame to pass.
Yeah.
And then you felt like you could partake.
Right.
I so identify.
Communion the same way?
Because
we didn't have communion at my church like every week. It was like a once a month thing.
Right.
And like, and we just so happened to like land on a weekend where like, and like, we're not talking like I was even doing anything that like.
For like me, it was like, did I look at gay porn this week?
Right. Yes. But like, even, I don't know. It's just so weird to even compare like different like things that were condemned, you know? But I remember in high school thinking, you know, like I wasn't drinking, I wasn't partying, I wasn't doing drugs, like, and those are things that I have done since then. but and at the time I thought, well, because those were more public, you know what I mean? Like nobody saw me do the sins that I did, you know?
Right.
And like other people were doing these things in front of people and then still like worshiping the same way. And then like, this is something that was just between me and God. Mm-hmm. And it just felt like I couldn't, like there was no one witnessed it besides myself. And like that made it feel even worse, I think, you know?
Mm-hmm. It was a secret.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Secrets are painful.
Yeah.
To be honest. I would also say this makes me think about, so let's say the 2 weeks pass and then the worship night comes around. And then you throw yourself into that worship and do like an hour to 2 hours of full on worship. How good was that feeling after that worship night?
Oh my gosh. It's like opening a fresh mineral water.
Yeah. Oh, I got one right here. I love opening. It's the best part.
Yeah. The one that's freshly fizzy. Like, you're
yes.
Just like
it
so
burns your throat.
Yeah.
Yes, girl. Yes. That's why I go through 20 a day. I'm just chasing that first sip. Literally.
You should get a like a soda stream thingy.
I have looked into it.
You would save
They're
so
kind
much
of
money.
Expensive though.
Yeah, but you get like months of bubbles.
Yeah. I know, but then it's not cold. That's the big one. Yeah. Who wants it's gotta be cold and effervescent.
Well, you can pour it over ice. I don't mind if it isn't cold actually.
Oh, I like the cold bubbles hitting my throat. But that's what a good worship night was like.
Yes.
Also,
yes.
It was a little bit like that feeling after a workout where you like have the endorphin rush.
I wouldn't know what that's like.
Oh, stop. You have gone running. I remember your running phases.
I mean, I went running last year.
Yeah.
But still not that feeling. Mm-mm.
Okay. So you don't like that feeling. You don't relate to that part.
I don't relate to that part.
Some listeners will.
Okay. Yeah, runner's high.
The runner's high, exactly. Yeah. But it was the worshiper's high.
Mm-hmm.
It really was
and high. Actually, no, this last year I also listened to an audiobook called Breath, I believe, or Breathe.
And you might have sent it to me.
Yeah, and it was on Audible. And they were talking about, like, different ways that, you know, different kinds of breathing and how it affects the body. And one thing that they found that was true between most cultures that have that exist on the planet that we know of, have some kind of chanting or singing about them, and that there's something that happens when we do a long exhale and a quick inhale and a long exhale, and how that like affects like us like in a good and euphoric way.
Wow.
And so like singing in general, especially group singing, like can induce euphoria, even if we weren't singing like proper words, like or weren't meditating on these certain precepts. I think that there's just something that happens, and something that, you know, unfortunately doesn't really happen outside of the church, except for at like big concerts, you know, where everyone's singing, where like it's a stadium and everyone's singing along and nobody minds that that's happening, you know. Mm-hmm. Like you can't really do that in like a coffee shop or like a small theater setting. Like you don't sing along with the singer when you're there, but if you're in a stadium, like you do, and you could, and everyone's there. I mean, certain kinds of music, rock or like, I don't know, EDM kind of stuff, festival music.
But I've done some Buddhist chanting. Yeah.
How do you feel after that?
Good. You feel good. You. I'm using the pronoun you, not I. No, I feel good after I do it, which I've like fallen out of practice of doing it. But it's like you like chant it out, and then maybe take a breath in and chant it out, take a breath in. And you like do it just over and over and over for like minutes. And mm-hmm. It really does do the sort of same thing that you're talking about.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. The meditative state.
Yeah, 100%.
So and I think it must be more connected to the breath than the syllables.
Probably.
Or the thought.
Yeah. That's beautiful. That's so interesting. The next song kind of has long vowels, does it not?
Yeah, in the chorus.
Yeah, that's interesting to me.
Oh, I want this.
And I think it's a particularly moving song.
It's one of my go-tos when I go back to the church and sing.
Do you still do that?
Sometimes, yeah.
Wow, how is that for you?
Well, I think it's... I understand more now. I'm not threatened by it. Mm. And I think that is like kind of where the strength comes from.
Mm-hmm.
And I still think that we can facilitate moments of transcendence with these songs. Mostly, mm-hmm. I mean, not all of them maybe, but some of them. And, you know, there's no harm in wanting peace, I don't think. Or like maybe I can change the narrative for somebody else that they would be able to see me living my life and my truth. Unthreatened by, you know, maybe shame or frustrations or like self-hatred, and like I'm not living in that anymore.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of the teachings of Jesus were so beautiful, and unfortunately the church has done really bad things with it, It's only in the last couple of years that I have been able to be so, and actually with this podcast as well, that I'm able to be so open about frustrations and pains and hang-ups and things that the church has done to me and I have done to it, and we have done together at mm-hmm. each other, for each other, blah. I feel like now that I'm able to live my authentic self without changing hats all the time, that this is just another part, you know, another charm in that bracelet.
And yeah.
These songs are more of a cultural thing to me than like a religious one, maybe.
Yeah. That's beautiful.
I'm curious to know what our listeners think about that, but that's where I'm at today.
The important thing, I think, is that you are still being your authentic self, and you are not hiding. And you're like, yes, I will come do this, but you're getting Calvin.
Right. So I still show up with glitter and eyeliner.
Yeah, exactly. And that's what you're getting, and I will lead your worship song.
Right. When peace like a river attendeth my way, when sorrows like sea billows roll, whatever my lot, thou hast taught me to say, it is well, it is well with my soul, it is well with my soul, it is well. Singing along the chorus here. It is well with my soul. It is well. It is well with my soul. It
is not well with my soul.
Why?
Just kidding. Because of the pandemic. No, that's beautiful. Actually, that's the point, right? Is that even in the midst of things like the pandemic, it's well with our soul because we are taken care of.
And well, there are things to be grateful for. And I hear similar messages in yogic practice and you know, and a lot of like the self healing, self care, self awareness movements that you know, people in our generation tend to, you know, not even question for good reason, you know, but like the same kind of ideas or mantras. I mean, that same idea is in my song called Headlights, and about, you know, like, I'm going to be okay. And like,
right,
that there are constants in our life that we can look to and see, you know, that's not changed by some emotion or some person and their baggage. Like this thing is a constant. And
in my recovery community, it's talked about. Mm-hmm. Like, I would hear a lot, you're being taken care of, you're being taken care of, you're being taken care of, that kind of thing. Which is, and it was not religious or Christian, mm-hmm. but it's mm-hmm. just this idea of like maybe the universe or some higher power can be there even though things are not perfect. Mm-hmm. That's a positive note.
Yeah.
That's really nice.
Yeah.
Wow. Mm. You straight up just led us in worship. That's what happened. Oh my goodness. Well, I'm glad if there were certain songs that if we were allowed to play them because of the rights, they would have been triggering for me.
Yeah,
I would have been like, no.
Well, I think we can talk about them. We just can't play them.
Yeah.
So I think you should like bring it up. Come on, bring it out.
Okay. The Shane and Shane song.
Yes.
Where he's like, Lord, I want to yearn. Lord, I want to yearn for you and only you. That was like something that I listened to. You know, I'm like listening to this during puberty while falling in love with people, while having my heart broken, while struggling with the fact that I'm gay, while having like cystic acne and then getting hardcore medication, like all of this stuff was happening in my life, and I would listen to that song over and over and over and over and connect with it from like a spiritual place and think about Jesus and God, you know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. So it's like all swirled together with God and shame and fear and pain and hope and
needing to recover from all those things.
Yeah.
Like bandaged up.
Yeah. So I hear like the first three plinks of the guitar of that song and I'm like recoiling in the corner.
Oh no.
Maybe I should listen to it as like an exercise.
Maybe with a friend in the room.
Yeah. Or like during therapy.
Yeah. Do that. Don't do that alone.
You're right. No.
The song that kind of like does a similar thing to me is Wrap Me in Your Arms by Michael Gungor.
Yeah.
There is a God who loves me, who wraps me in his arms. And that is the place where I'm changed. That's where I belong. And it's just like, you know, again, this all, because, okay, like, remember, like, side hugs, you know, and shit? Like, we weren't allowed to touch. Like, we weren't allowed to touch people. And I was, like, very, very much, for the most part, of that like thinking and feeling and culture. So I was not like a really touchy-feely person. And like, you know, you and I, we didn't even hug until you lived in New York.
Yeah, that's crazy. Because now like, we hug all the time.
Yeah, I mean, when we see each other, but normally it's been like months, you know?
Yes,
true. And now years, but like when, like back when in high school and stuff, like I didn't hug anybody. Like it was like not a thing I did for a long time.
Right.
And so like the idea of being held by God was this like very like not sexual, but sensual, you know, desire and want. And so you sing about these things and then put on top of that, like the International House of Prayer was producing songs that were completely, written from the perspective of, or the allegory of the bridal paradigm,
right?
Of Jesus coming back as the groom to a bride, and the bride being the church. And so we would sing these very, I mean, romantic passages of Song of Solomon as a congregation. Oh my God. Oh, that got really bad fast in my brain. I'm not going to say that out loud. But asking for Jesus to come back. And
and, <Hey-o. laughs>
and to be with us and for us to be with him. And like, yeah, all of those feelings like you're talking about, the shame and the you know, lack of self-worth and self-hatred and all of that wrapped in the solution.
And even the hope.
And even the hope.
And joy.
And the joy, yeah. Wrapped up into the... And I'm here, like, crying. Wrapped into the person of Jesus, this promise that he's coming back for us, believing that that is the truth. Mm-hmm. And that, like, that was actually, like, is happening, is going... Like, we're in the midst of it.
Yeah.
And... And that was the only, like, true saving grace.
Mm-hmm.
And there's nothing else worth waiting for. Like, there was no other solutions. Yeah. This is not something that you can talk through. This is not something that you can change your negative thoughts around. This is not something that you could, read the words, reinterpret the words of the Bible and, like, understand them in a more clear way, possibly. You know, like, that wasn't a possibility. It's like, we already have...
Right.
Like the general understanding of this book, it is 100% infallible. Everyone should follow it all the time. And if you don't, you're unworthy. And if you're unworthy, then you need to spend your whole entire life on your face, on your hands and your knees, praying that God would make you clean so that you would be somebody that he would come back for. And until right. you have done that for the rest of your life, until you're dead, then hopefully he comes back before then so that you can enjoy some of your life. But if not, you'll have afterlife. You'll have heaven. And that's what you should be living for. And that's just so fucked up.
It's a touch toxic life. I don't love it.
Just a wee bit.
Lord. Well, we're in a different place now. And we can be grateful for that.
Yes, grateful.
And now we can look at these songs and sing these songs from a more evolved perspective and with some appreciation and a bit of disdain, perhaps, and everything in between.
Everything in between.
Do you think we should do our praise reports? Do you remember what those are, Calvin? Since Calvin forgets our segments.
Yeah, we didn't do it last week, though.
I know. I thought about that.
Yeah.
And I don't even have one lined up. That's why I'm putting you on the spot.
Well, I don't either, because the Chiefs lost.
Oh, come on. It is well with your soul. Okay.
Let me think of something. Well, there's a lot of snow here in Kansas City, and I feel like I have successfully navigated driving in it, and that's been scary.
Oh, good. I'm glad that you have been safe. Yes. Snow can be beautiful, right?
Yes, definitely beautiful, but also terrifying when you're on the road and it's like icing.
I will say I have been a big, big, big sourpuss about Valentine's Day and telling my boyfriend I don't like it and I don't even want to celebrate it and all of this. But I'm grateful that I have a cute guy that is a hopeless romantic, bless his heart, and is trying his best to get me to celebrate this with him. So I am grateful for that. How's that?
Good.
I need to practice gratitude for that.
Let that happen, because life is short.
Life is short.
You have somebody to do that with, and it's nice.
You're right. Should you sing us out with a song? And we'll end on that.
Yeah.
Okay.
What a friend we have in Jesus.
Trigger warning.
All our sins and griefs to bear. What a privilege to carry everything to God in prayer. Oh, what peace we often forfeit. Oh, what needless pain we bear. Oh, because we do not carry everything to God in prayer. everything to God in prayer.
A God of your own understanding, or whatever that means to you.
Amen.
Amen. Well, this was fun.
Yeah. Wait, do we, yeah. Never mind. I love you, Justin.
I love you too, Cal. Okay.
Right.
Bye.
Bye. 1, 2, 3, 4. We were Christian kids. We were Christian kids. We were Christian kids. No, I mean, like, really, 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 really Christian. And thus concludes this week's episode of We Were Christian Kids, featuring your very own Calvin Arsenia and
Justin Randall. Thank you so much for listening. This is your weekly reminder to please rate, review, and subscribe, and share with those you love.
Since it's Valentine's Day. Week.